Greetings, good gamers, to yet another episode of the Daily Days Podcast, the occasional show that waxes nostalgic with a retro glow. I'm Mr. Picario, your dedicated host on this humble trek, both through the good and the dreck. And this week, we get a smidge controversial about a specific game, company, and person, E.T. the Extraterrestrial for the Atari 2600, a game designed in 5 weeks by the famous, or some might say infamous, Howard Scott Warshaw. As many know, E.T. is often cited as one of the worst games of all time, spurring the legendary video game crash that almost tanked the American industry forever. But was it really E.T.'s fault? Is the game really so bad? And more to the point, does Mr. Warshaw really deserve the title and shame he's sometimes stuck with as being the maker of history's most terrible title? Many have said yes, some recent history revisionists have said no, but I have my own hot perspective, which we will get to. So you see, there was this movie, E.T. the Extraterrestrial, that was a huge hit in 1982. Atari, being the video game industry leader at the time, wisely saw the movie as an opportunity to seize some easy money. After going to see this beloved film, I mean, who wouldn't want to relive the experience in digital form, right? So the company, on this thought, rushed to sign a licensing deal with Steven Spielberg and Universal Pictures, with contracts signed in late July. This seemed like a win-win for all involved, except for one little issue. To manufacture the cartridges in time for a Christmas release, the game itself would have to be completed by the beginning of September, giving the poor programmer roughly 5 weeks to finish the job. Even in those days, this was not a lot of time when the usual game creation cycle averaged 5 to 6 months. Thus enters Howard Scott Warshaw, the talented designer who agreed to program the game despite the rigorous, some might say ridiculous, development schedule. Why did he agree? Well, according to Wikipedia and other sources, he thought it would provide an interesting challenge. It probably didn't hurt either that Spielberg had also asked for him personally, but it was more than flattery and pride, I'm sure, that pushed Warshaw into the assignment. The real convincer was financial. Wikipedia states he was paid $200,000 for his 5 weeks of work, which in today's dollars amounts to over $500,000. Some sources even claim he was paid a royalty on every cart sold. Some go further and say it was not every cart sold, but every cartridge printed, which, if true either way, likely made him an easy millionaire. These latter points are important, as it shows that Warshaw was not just a hapless worker forced by his evil employer to grind out a product to meet an unreasonable deadline. Indeed, Warshaw could have said no. He understood the stakes and the challenge, but already flattered and with all that money waved in front of him, he agreed. In essence, he took a chance. The more cynical might say he sold out. We'll be right back. So, putting it nicely, he took a chance, which would have been fine if the game had been the critical darling and instant classic he no doubt intended. His previous works, Yar's Revenge and Raiders of the Lost Ark, were generally well received, with the former even being a childhood favorite for many. Maybe then Warshaw figured that a third hit was not just feasible, but inevitable, and with that third game being based on the unsinkable E.T. property, it probably did seem like this was the one gig he couldn't possibly screw up. And he wasn't wrong, at least at first. Early numbers pegged the game at 1.5 million units sold at initial launch, with another million following by the end of 1982. The problem, however, was that many of these purchases started coming back, over 600,000 throughout 1983. Critics weren't too impressed either, generally finding the title dull and, when compared to the film, rather inexplicable. So, word of mouth spread, the game stopped selling, got heavily discounted, and ultimately Atari was left with about 3 million unsold E.T. cartridges. And considering how expensive the original licensing deal was in the first place, this meant an exorbitant loss of money for Atari. So much so that, yeah, the E.T. fiasco is often blamed for being a significant catalyst for the resulting video game crash and the company's downfall. But questions do remain. Is the game really that bad, as in the worst game of all time bad? Should Howard Warshaw be held responsible for such a blunder? Is it fair to hold him and his game accountable for the entire industry imploding? Well, let's start with the first point. No, the game is not the worst title of all time. Of course not. It's playable, ambitious, and even has some interesting ideas. The problem has more to do with its execution and perhaps a misreading of its intended audience. Would kids embrace a game in which E.T. hobbles across bland environments, falls constantly into holes, and is forced to uncover obtusely hidden telephone pieces? Would the average player be patient enough to withstand the game's turgid gameplay to unravel its more redeeming, deeper nuances? The answer, naturally, is no. Whether the title is outright bad or just vastly mediocre, it's still a game completely out of touch with its core demographic. The third question, is the game solely responsible for the 1983 crash, is another obvious no. Yeah, the game contributed to Atari's demise for sure, but in reality most people never saw E.T. as the sole culprit for the industry's downfall. Rather, it just became a convenient symbol of such. For the industry's crass excess, its foolish presumption, its bad marketing practices, greed, and outright arrogance that so marked the Atari bubble in those strange early days. Indeed, there were plenty of bad games back then, plenty of dumb decisions made, plenty of miscalculations, and an overall glut of mediocre product that far outstripped the waning demand. E.T. was simply made to be a convenient example, a fall guy, if you will, of everything wrong with that era. From Atari's dubious business practices and poor understanding of the video game market to every other toy company and fly-by-night startup that thought making a crummy game would lead to massive profits. Combine all of this with poor, clueless management and, yep, guess what? The market tanked. Big time. All of this brings us to the big middle question. Is Howard Warshaw to blame for any of this? And if so, how much? It's an unfair question, really, as obviously it's silly to lay the industry's fall on a single man when it was really the result of irresponsible companies thinking the profit train would last forever. But on a narrower scale, is E.T. itself a bad game that added to the glut of terrible titles that helped sink the entire video game empire? I do think Warsha does bear some responsibility here. He knew the challenges, the risks involved when he accepted the assignment, yet he favored his own ungainly game design over Steven Spielberg's suggestion of making the title play more like a Pac-Man clone. And you know what? Despite all of that, Warsha made a ton of money by doing so, some might say at Atari's long-term expense. Years later, when his reputation got besmirched due to people looking back and remembering just how disappointing the game actually is, his gamble suddenly didn't seem so golden. But that's the nature of risk versus reward, isn't it? Anyway, Warsha himself tries to be a good sport about his mixed reputation nowadays, saying he doesn't really mind the controversy and even finds it humorous that he's known across both sides of the spectrum, his games both praised and defamed, depending on the title. He's not really fooling anyone, though, as he has become emotional about the subject on occasion, and it's no secret that he's been seeking sympathetic figures in the community and journalistic circles who are willing to revisit his legacy, namely E.T., and provide a more positive contrarian take. Not only is the game said to be underrated by some, a few have even outright insisted that it's actually pretty good. This revisionist take aside, though, most probably agree that, underappreciated or not, this was not the game most expected or wanted on Christmas morning 1982, especially if you were a young kid enamored with E.T. and his world. This stodgy, slow-paced charade of the actual film just wasn't going to recreate that endearing movie magic. And Howard Warsha, despite what he and his apologists say, needs to own up to that fact. He rolled the dice, received a hefty payday, but at the cost of some detractors in later years who, rightfully, criticize E.T. for what it is and what it should have been. A rushed game made at the behest of an arrogant company and done by an overconfident programmer. But still a game that could have been fun had the vision simply been different and more time given. A sacrifice made, let's be honest, in the name of making some quick, easy money. Warsha might not like that E.T. has become the scapegoat of an unhealthy industry, but he did get paid royally all the same, and today enjoys a level of popularity and media coverage most other game designers of the era can only dream of. In other words, Warsha is doing okay. Better than most, in fact. So, yeah, you are allowed to say that E.T. is a terrible game. It certainly isn't a good one. And so concludes the final episode of the Daily Days podcast for 2021. I hope this year ends well for all of you, but really I'm hoping that 2022 treats us all a bit better than maybe this last year has. In any case, thanks for listening. If only all our mistakes, like Warsaw's, could lead to such fame and fortune all the same. Until next time, this is Mr. Picario, signing off.